No risk it, no biscuit.
Coming from the Arizona desert, presented by SBNation.com. For Arizona Cardinals fans, by Arizona Cardinals fans, with outsider and insider's perspectives, this is Revenge of the Birds.
Good evening and hello, Arizona Cardinals fans. This is Revenge of the Birds Radio, your Arizona Cardinals podcast. By fans, for fans, with a little bit of media coverage in there, since your host, your truly just root, I am a Cardinals fan, and I do have media access, so you get a little bit of both worlds. Anyway, welcome to Dirty Night. Thank you for listening. This is our 78th show of Revenge of the Birds Radio, and we're going to be talking training camp tonight. But let's talk about what we're going to be doing, because the Arizona Cardinals started training camp a couple of weekends ago. Of course, how it goes in the last that we had was 2 weeks ago with Seth Cox. And what we did was preview the position battles in that. And since the start of camp, there have been some interesting happenings, some interesting twists and plots and narratives. Will you, have not? But kind of the start was the first kind of story that went through training camp were the nagging little injuries. Nothing really serious, but just even the first couple of days when there weren't pads on, there was injury after injury, just hamstrings, this and that. Sean Weatherspoon went down. Andre Ellington went down. Then the pads went on after the first weekend. And then we begin to have some more. That as many as 13 players were out at one time with 6 or 7 hamstring injuries. But we're starting to see those players. What happened in the world of Arizona Cardinals over the last week and the last 2 weeks? Well, we talked about Gresham during the Arizona Cardinals, but the Cardinals made some moves after that. In fact, the roster looks slightly different. And let's kind of run things down. First, Michael Floyd gets injured. That's the worst injury that we've had so far of this of training camp. He makes a catch. Well, he falls to the ground, dislocates 3 fingers. And by doing so, he has to have surgery. And he's going to be out for 3 to 6 weeks, perhaps missing the regular season opener. There isn't any real timetable. But it wasn't as drastic as it could have been. Next, a familiar face has returned to the Arizona Cardinals. That would be Lyle Sendlein, the 4-time captain of the team, who was cut in a contract in a business move over the offseason. He was re-signed, and he will compete for the starting job with A.Q. Shipley. So he is back on the roster. The Cardinals added a cornerback in Shaquille Richardson, former U of A product. He's down at the bottom of the depth chart right back there. And then more recently, we have, with the injuries, there is a contract offer on the table that the Arizona Cardinals have offered to veteran running back Chris Johnson, most recently of the New York Jets, a free agent who has yet to be signed. He's going to be turning 30 this year. But most famously for his years with the Tennessee Titans, including a 2,000-yard rushing season. Seth and I will talk a little bit more about this when we get to that part of the show. And that was news that was as of today, Tuesday. And after that, we have the news that right tackle Bobby Massing, having a fantastic camp, will be suspended as many as 3 games of the first of the regular season, the first 3 regular season games, connected to a DUI he got over Super Bowl week. Now, what else is there to know? Who are the players who have been injured? Well, the significant players, Larry Fitzgerald missed, parts of practice with a sore foot that got stepped on. Andre Ellington missed several days. With Missed several days with a hamstring injury. Right tackle, first round pick, DJ Humphreys, hurt his knee. And he just barely came back. Sean Witherspoon tweaked a hamstring. He's working back. Troy Nicholas, who started training camp on the non-football injury list. And he's just now cleared, so he has yet to practice, really. He's been doing some team drills. Jermaine Gresham signed as a free agent, coming off of offseason back surgery. Is close to getting some work. More recently, cornerback Gerard Powers suffered an oblique strain. He will be off for a couple days. The plan is hopefully he should be able to play this week against the Kansas City Chiefs in the preseason opener. And let's see what else. What else are we looking at in terms of injuries? Quarterbacks are okay. The running back rather depleted. So David Johnson, third round pick, David Johnson, the rookie, rips off a great outside run. Pulls up lame. Yep, hamstring. So Andre Ellington would miss time with a hamstring. David Johnson has a grade 2 hamstring. They're hoping to get him back in the next week. That's more optimally. Marion Grice, who was on the team last season, also suffering from a hamstring injury. So three running backs out with a hamstring injury. Sean Witherspoon out with a hamstring injury. Earl Watford missed a little bit of time with an ankle problem. He's back and playing again. And then we get Sean Witherspoon mentioned. Zach Wagaman came back. Shaq Riddick, the fifth round pick, he happened to injure his hamstring again. It's a partial tear. He missed almost every single practice of the offseason. Then he comes to training camp, no pads on, and the hamstring's an issue again. It's a long-term thing. He probably, if I had to predict, will end up on injured reserve. So that's kind of the rundown of all the injuries. And tonight we've got a pretty good show as Seth joins me on the line here in a moment as I bring him on. And we're going to be talking about some of the biggest stories. The Cardinals have their first preseason game this weekend against the Kansas City Chiefs. The depth chart is out. We can see, at least initially, who's in the lead in these wonderful positional battles, who's on the bubble, et cetera, et cetera. However, there's some bigger topics that came up, and so we're going to bring Seth on to talk about them. Welcome to the show, Seth. As always, how are you doing tonight?
Good, Jeff. How are you?
I'm doing all right. Thanks for coming on, as always. So we've got some things we're going to talk about. Namely, we're going to talk about the biggest topics of the weeks. We have, number one, we should talk about Chris Johnson. We don't know if he's going to be a team or if he's joining the Cardinals, but the Cardinals would like that to happen. Let's talk. After we talk about that, we'll talk about the Bobby Massey situation. Very interesting situation. Michael Floyd's injury. We'll talk Lyle Sendlein's return. And then if we have a little bit of time, let's talk a little bit about the depth chart that came out. So Chris Johnson, Bruce Arians not thrilled with his running backs. He praised Kerwin Williams, talked about how wonderful he'd be doing, and then promptly put a couple of balls on the ground in practice. Has not looked great since. Andre Ellington seems to be a little bit under the gun. Of course, David Johnson has yet to put pads on. And whew. So with the running back situation, what we thought was going to be, hey, we got the nice 1-2 punch, maybe 1-2-3 if you add in Kerwin Williams. Suddenly, the running back position looks kind of weak. Is your take on Bruce Arians sort of lighting a fire under the rear ends of all these guys in his talk? Because he announced it, says, hey, we're looking at some veteran guys that are out. They're going to bring someone else in.
Yeah, and I think when you look at it, at the running back position for the Cardinals, it's just been it's been kind of a cluster so far. You have Andre Ellington, who was 100% healthy, allegedly, coming into the season or coming into training camp, and he's already nicked up. And then you have a rookie who, you know, you spent a third-round pick on, and everybody was expecting him to be kind of the guy, and he hasn't even taken a snap yet, really. I mean, I know he's taking snaps, but he hasn't even taken a snap that matters yet. And now, you know, you kind of looking at Kerwin Williams and Marion Grice, and it kind of reminds you of the end of last year when you're like, oh God, Ryan Lindley or Kerwin Williams, who's gonna, you know, who's gonna get the ball for you? So I think now you kind of look at it and you understand why they'd want to go look at a guy like Chris Johnson and maybe you know, bring him in. And I think the lack of anything happening thus far, or, you know, where it's being mulled over, is good friend Scott Allen of the fan-sided Cardinal side, I can't remember the name of it off the top of my head right now, you know, said, you know, Johnson's mulling over, you know, what he wants to do. And it's like, on both sides, neither side really has the opportunity to mull over, because you're talking four preseason games. I mean, we're less than 4 weeks, or just about 4 weeks away from the NFL season starting. And, you know, he's got to start getting reps. Arians' offense isn't an easy offense to learn at running back. And, you know, if both teams or both sides need to figure something out, if this is the play that they're going to make, because, you know, like I said, you have not, from the time that Andre Ellington has been at Clemson to now, you have not been able to trust him to stay healthy, and you just have no idea what you have in David Johnson. So bringing in a veteran like Chris Johnson, while it's not what, you know, a guy that I am particularly high on at this point in his career, it makes sense, because he's a guy you can just kind of hopefully plug in and make work. As long as he gets the reps, I think that's what you have to worry about.
Well, kind of an interesting thing. So the comments that Andre Ellington made the other day, I was really kind of intrigued by it. And no, he said he didn't feel pressure. He didn't feel any pressure to get the field. But clearly that was the motivation to get him back on the field. And then he said, what he said was, is there a game? Then yeah, I'll be on the field. It's almost like, after all his missed practice time last year, he's kind of gotten used to not missing and not worrying about it. And the issue is, now granted, now's the time to miss practice if you're going to. But because they're not doing game planning and anything like that. But he spent 12 weeks last year of not practicing a whole, not full contact. And he was not an effective back. Yes, he was dinged up. He had some issues, but he was not an effective back. He wasn't dynamic in the passing game. He only flashed once in a while. He was definitely not the player that he was his rookie year. And here you go again, and he's just tweaking again, and he's talking, we're not talking about, we're talking about practice. And but he did get back on the field, and so there's a little bit of concern. And he made the comment, too, how he gained a couple of pounds. He's up to 195. How do you gain a couple pounds in a couple of days and have that be good? But that's about what he played last year. So I'm not worried about being any more durable. It's just he seems to have gotten into a habit of not doing that, of just not practicing. David Johnson's another issue, as you know, Arians made it very clear today. He's kind of getting the Ryan Williams treatment. And basically saying there's no way in hell he's going to get out there and play if he misses camp, because he hasn't had any practice in pads. So he needs to get out there. And the longer it takes for him to heal from that hamstring, we're going to see a wasted rookie year for him. And in some ways, bringing in Chris Johnson, I think, will be helpful. It kind of mitigates that. And one of the things I tweeted out this morning, on Tuesday morning, was when I saw the news, I'm not necessarily thrilled about the idea of Chris Johnson. I don't know how much he has to offer. I mean, yes, he 4.3 yards. I got some numbers that Brian Giberman gave me about it. I mean, he's all about Johnson. After all, he's a big, big Jets fan. But if you bring in Chris Johnson, then you're going to end up with your 1-2 punch being Johnson and Ellington. Who gets more carries? That's going to be an interesting conversation. Johnson has some of the same skill set. However, you were hoping to get that, but you don't get a big back. David Johnson then basically is put on the back burner for next year, hopefully to be number two. Kerwin Williams, I think, is in danger. If they bring in Chris Johnson, I think Kerwin Williams is pretty much, you know, SOL. But here, let's hear some numbers here. This is I don't know what to take of this so far. He averaged 4.3 yards per carry. He got 663 yards in what I think 155 carries. Andre Ellington got 660 yards on 201 carries, averaging a whole yard less per carry. Giverman was he didn't recommend Johnson by any fashion, and he gave me these stats. He says, almost like he did so much more. Chris Johnson was so much more effective when the Jets were losing, when they were tied. So he got 45 carries when the Jets were leading, averaged a whopping 3.3 yards. When the were tied, there was 21 carries, averaging 5.1. And when the Jets were trailing, he got 89 of his 155 carries, averaging 4.6 yards. Now, which is an interesting thing. So when you're trailing, you tend to pass the ball a bit more. And when you're leading, you want to try and run the ball more. Now, granted, the Jets team, that wasn't particularly good. But the fact, and naturally, when you are winning and you're trying to run the ball to run the clock, you aren't going to run as effectively because the defense is keying on it. So I'm not quite sure what to look at in terms of those numbers. Is there, what do you think Chris Johnson actually has left, and would he be good for the Cardinals?
I don't know how much he has left because he hasn't really done much the last couple of years. Like you said, he's been around that 4.3. But let's be honest. I mean, 4.3 in a Cardinals offense is like at this point. I kind of side with Giverman on this. He's not really that great anymore. There's a reason the Jets didn't have any interest in bringing him back. There's a reason that no NFL team has signed him right now. And it's not that he's, like, bad or anything. It's just that – well, I shouldn't have said that. It's not that he's awful. It's just that he wants money. He wants to be paid like a premium running back, and he hasn't really been a premium running back for the last 3 years. So, you know – and I'm not sure, and I think he kind of proved it last year. I'm not sure he's really a big player. I'm not sure if he can, you know, be a guy that only gets, you know, 15 to 20 touches a game and, you know, doesn't get his 25-plus. You just worry about guys like that that aren't able to do it. And like I said, it wouldn't be my favorite guy for them to sign, but I think – eventually, you know, when you wait this long to make a sign like this, you kind of have to. And you know, there's definitely worse out there. So, and I think going in with like a backfield of half an Andre Ellington and Kerwin Williams and Marion Grice is definitely worse than, maybe a half an Andre Ellington behind Chris Johnson and Ian Kerwin Williams is your third guy that will get, you know, two or three carries a game if Andre's out or if Chris Johnson can't do anything that game.
So, let's guess that Johnson does accept the deal for whatever number it is. He makes the team, would you say? Does he make the team over Kerwin Williams, over David Johnson, over those guys? I would assume so.
You know, I think it ends up pushing David Johnson down to third running back. And I think it kind of does what we've talked about before. It probably allows Ellington to go back into that 40% role, which is really when he's been the most successful. And then Johnson will be in that 60% role. And you know, if you get 30 carries a game, you're probably going to get, you know, what is that? You're probably going to get 18 to 20 for Chris Johnson, and then you're only going to get, you know, 10 to 12 for Andre Ellington, and then you'll probably have Andre Ellington catch the ball, you know, 2 to 3, 4 times a game. And that's kind of the way Ellington will be used. And I think, again, I think that's the way he's most effective. I think, you know, I even bought in, or, you know, his rookie year, that he could be an every down back. And he hasn't shown the ability to stay healthy and on the field to do that. So I think using him in, you know, kind of a 40% role, and if Chris Johnson's your 60% role, I think you're okay. I think what is most disappointing, and I'm sure, you know, you and I have talked about it on text, and so we probably agree with this, is it's the fact that David Johnson's, you know, where is he? Why hasn't he even got on the field yet, you know? Like you said, he's getting the Ryan Williams treatment, but, you know, how injured is he? It's a hamstring. I know those things linger, but I don't know. It is worrisome that a rookie that you kind of you're hoping to count on is, what is this, week three of camp, and he hasn't even taken a meaningful snap.
Yeah. I think David Johnson bumps down to that, and he's only going to play special teams. Because, I mean, I think the one, that's the whole thing with Andre Ellington. As glowing as Bruce Arians has been over the past couple seasons about Andre Ellington, I think he's to wear Bruce out, because we know how Bruce is about guys in the training room. We know he hates it, and if you don't come back quickly or ahead of schedule, you tend to get yourself in the doghouse. And I think we're finding Ellington starting to find that area. Arians is no longer here. I said he wants to get him, you know, 20 touches a game. Alex is going to practice, and it's kind of the glow about Andre Ellington has sort of worn off, and now he's becoming, is he tough enough? I think Kerwin Williams is the one really in danger. I don't think Marion Grice has got a shot at all at this point. He's been missing time, and he hasn't shown to be very dynamic. He hasn't been able to the offense particularly well. His skill set is real good for the team, but he doesn't get it. He just isn't getting it. So I think if it becomes, well, if Kerwin is on, and with Stephon good on special teams and such a good pass blocker, that really puts Kerwin sort of, you know, out of luck.
Would they, I mean, and this is just talking, we haven't talked about this, but would Arians IR David Johnson? Like, if he doesn't come back in the next couple weeks, I mean, would he just IR him, and so he could let Williams stay on the roster, and then, you know, you have a, and this is all based on Chris Johnson signing, obviously, but if you have Johnson, you know, Chris Johnson, Ellington, Williams, and Taylor, because like you said, I don't see how Taylor doesn't make this team at this point. You know, God forbid an injury, but other than that, like, I don't see any way he doesn't make the team at this point. So would he get set up enough with Johnson not being out there to maybe IR him, even with the designated to return IR? And I don't know. It just seems like you said, Arians has never really been a fan of guys that don't come back on his schedule. And, you know, we saw it with Jonathan Cooper last year. There's a reason Cooper didn't play in front of a very bad Larson and Panika. And it wasn't because he wasn't as talented. It was just because Bruce Arians didn't see the toughness, or, you know, whatever adjective you want to use, in, you know, to get him on the field. And so I'm wondering if that's going to, like you said, happen to David Johnson here with, you know, what is a hamstring tweak, but, I mean, we're talking 2 weeks now.
Right. Well, it was a more serious one. They said it's grade 2, not being a doctor, you know. Bruce Arians quote, my title doesn't say MD, it says coach. Well, anyway, I don't know how serious that is. I don't think he'd get IR'd, because you're going to run into, you actually have to be hurt to go into reserve technically. So you might run into some NFLPA issues. However, he is easily buried on the depth chart, relegated to some special teams, or maybe even inactive. You got Taylor, and then you got Johnson. You leave him relegated to special teams play. or maybe it opens the door for Robert Hughes and you keep Johnson inactive. But it's crucial because Arians is really big about you miss camp, you don't play season. So Chris Johnson he is what he is. Would he be better? This is a question. What do you think? It'd be better than Rashard Mendenhall. Would he be better than that?
Well, I mean, that's such a low bar. That's what the problem. Like, when you talk about it, I'm not convinced that he wouldn't be better than Andre Ellington was last year. What was he, 3.3 yards per carry? I'm not convinced that he wouldn't have a better time than Ellington, just by the fact that they should have a better offensive line and a better offense altogether. So you would think so, but you never know. I would definitely, I mean, like I said, at this point, it's not like they have a ton of options. So they got to do something. And to me, it needs to be done sooner rather than later. That's just me though.
That is true. Now, so we talked about Chris Johnson. The next one is kind of an odd thing, and there's a lot to kind of speculate on, and that's Bobby Massey. News came down that he is going to be suspended for the first three games of the NFL season. Coming after DUI arrest after he was asleep in his car the week of the Super Bowl. And now, what was kind of interesting, the appeals hasn't been going on, and it's interesting that suspension news came out, because normally you don't hear about the suspension right away until the appeals process has gone down. So somebody found something, someone said something, but he's appealing to get it down to two, and that's simply because the new conduct policy or the new legal the substance abuse policy is any DUI is two games for first offense and couldn't be more. Circumstance. I'm not sure what the circumstances would be to make it three games, but he's going to try and get it down to two, is what people are saying. Which means the guy that we thought would be hopefully cashing in this year on a great season, on a big free agent deal, suddenly he's going to start the season on the bench, or actually not roster technically. And we leave it to now, will it be the rookie DJ Humphreys? Will it be Bradley Saul? Or maybe, just maybe, could it be Earl Watford? The pick. Now, the Cardinals didn't know of the suspension. They would have known about the arrest. They would have known about the arrest when it happened. That's something that, players have to do. They find this stuff out and they tell their team. So the Cardinals had to know that a suspension was likely coming based on league rules. Think that influenced their pick at all in the first round? Yes, they were. And Jarecki keeps holding to this. Jarecki holds that the Cardinals wanted to trade up for Bud Dupree. So he's held to that a lot. So they were going to trade up. They didn't. But instead, pick a guy that, was kind prize in DJ Humphreys. Do you think that pick was influenced at all by the knowledge that Massey probably would be suspended for a couple of games?
Well, so you and I have talked about this personally, but I've been told that they were upset in back-to-back situations because they wanted Dupree and then they wanted Shane Ray. And they were upset that the Broncos got in front of them for Shane Ray. Take that for whatever it is. I don't know if that's accurate or not, but I mean, it makes sense. Obviously they drafted a pass rusher in the second round, so clearly that was a player and position they wanted to address. So when it got there and, Dupree was gone and Ray was gone and they're sitting there at 24, and you look at their board and kind of how everything lined up, we have to assume Randy Gregory wasn't even on the board because they passed him again in the second round. We probably assumed the same thing with Odizawa or whatever his name was. And so you look at it, at that point, it just became about best player. And that's something that we've talked about before. When you look at Steve Keim's draft, he usually flip-flops his picks between best player available and best player available at a need position. You kind of go back and look at, you know, Jonathan Cooper, best player at a glaring need on the offensive line. Then in the second round, you know, best player, they had Manti Te'o, they had Kiko Alonso on the board, you know, and they went with Kevin Minter. Maybe inside linebacker was a need? Probably not, you know, at the time. So, you know, that was probably just who their best player was. Anyways, going back to this draft, you see how that kind of delineates into this now, where they had DJ Humphreys there. And I saw you get into an exchange with Josh Weinfuss on Twitter about this, and I thought you were pretty accurate. And, you know, I said, you know, kind of same thing. Like, when the name DJ Humphreys came up the day before the draft, and we had a draft show, and, you know, that night, I think it was, and or, you know, a couple days before, and Mike Mayock mocked DJ Humphreys, and Cardinals fans were kind of in a tizzy about
this. Like, who? Why? Why?
Yeah. And this was something that I talked about. Guys like Andres Pete, DJ Humphreys, I even said Jake Fisher, all made sense there because they can come in and they don't have to play right away. And when you're drafting in the mid-20s, you're not always going to get an impact player. Sometimes you're going to get a player that's going to make an impact in year two or even year three because you're, you know, hopefully and supposedly a good team. And that's what the Cardinals were. The Cardinals were a good team with not a ton of holes to fill. They had one glaring weakness, and that was pass rusher. You can, you know, we can go back to the beginning of this conversation and go say running back too, but they had one glaring weakness, a pass rusher. The guys they wanted were gone. So they were going to pick the guy that they wanted the best, and that was DJ Humphreys. And now all of a sudden, Bobby Massey and the fact that he's made $1.8 million over his career, he's making $1.6 million this year alone, couldn't afford to call a cab or get an Uber or, you know, call a friend. So he decided intelligently to sleep it off in the car. Unfortunately, any person that has been through driving class knows that if you're in your car drunk with your keys, you can get arrested for your DUI because it looks like you're going to try to drive your car while intoxicated. So
yes, it's either you were driving or you're gonna drive, and it's a tough law, and I understand why it's on the book, but it's tough.
Yeah, and
because
so now,
even law enforcement are like, I don't know what to do about this.
But you know what? Now you sit there and you go, and you know, based on what I've heard from camp, based on the conversations we've had, I think Earl Watford's kind of the front runner right now at right tackle. I think it's Watford and then probably Fowle and then probably Humphreys. And I think Humphreys can overtake Fowle pretty quickly if he decides he wants.
No, why would you think that? Why would you think that? Sal, who's, you know, who started 10 games at left tackle for the Cardinals, doesn't that make him quality?
So, you know, and so that, I think he can overtake him fairly quickly. But, you know, everything I've heard, everything I've read, everything I've seen, Earl's kind of been a menace this year in a good way. And so I think DJ is going to have his work cut out for him to get, you know, to overtake Earl as the right tackle. And something I've talked about with, you know, a friend of both of ours, Aaron Cox, and we've talked about before, is that Earl kind of reminds me of Willie Colon. And I wrote about this a long time ago, but Bruce Arians' best tackle during his tenure as an NFL offensive coordinator or head coach was Willie Colon, if you go by Pro Football Focus grades. And Earl's got a little bit of that in him. Undersized guy, small school, and it took him a year, you know, in Earl's case, 2 years, but he ended up being a guy that was really good for a, you know, a 4 or 5 year run. And I think that could be Earl here. And that doesn't mean anything bad about BJ. It just means that a guy has matured over his, you know, 2 years on the bench, and now he's ready to, you know, take on a role as a starter. And that's, you know, that's kind of what you want from a fourth round pick and developmental player like Earl Wofford was. And now all of a sudden he's in, you know, contention with the 24th overall pick for that right tackle position. And, you know, we'll see if it's the best man wins or if it's the player that they need to wins. You know what I'm saying? Hopefully.
Yeah.
Hopefully
well, let's look at a couple of scenarios. Now we saw Darryl Washington was suspended in 2013, jumps right in week and after the fourth, after his 4-game suspension, and jumps right into the starting lineup and plays. So you could go that route. Obviously, there was a drop off. Even though I'll give you this, Jasper Brinkley was a guy the team raved about. What he did, yet they cut him at the end of the year, and he didn't really play. He only played a handful of downs the rest of the season. Going forward, so there are a couple of ways it could happen. Doesn't matter who starts at right tackle, whether it's Bradley Sal, whether it's DJ Humphreys, whether that's Earl Watt. So he sits full 3 games, and he returns, jumps into the starting lineup. No big deal. That's one route, assuming that whoever either plays bad, whoever plays okay or plays decent, but BA still thinks Massey's the guy. He's still the best option. Let's go with this. Let's assume, for summary, okay, let's go with DJ Humphreys. And we're going to leave Bradley Sal out of the conversation for the sake of leaving him out of the conversation, because I know how you feel about him. let's assume DJ steps in. He becomes the starter week one. And he plays really well. Do you put Massey back in there? Or do you let Humphreys play? And then Massey gets the stupidity treatment and will end the season, assuming there's no other injury, a free agent having been on the bench. Even if DJ kills it, would you think that Massey would still end up out there?
No, because I think it's a little different than, well, let's back up. I think it is the same as the Darryl Washington situation. I think the only difference is Bradley Sal is Jasper Brinkley, and we're hoping that either Earl Wofford is, you know, Carlos Anzi, or DJ Humphreys is not Kevin Minter. You know what I'm saying? Because that's what people forget.
Yes.
Kevin Minter was on the team. He just wasn't good enough to beat out Jasper Brinkley at the time. And so it was Jasper and Carlos. So what I'm saying is, if it is DJ, you hope that he is Carlos Anzi, and he just makes you forget about the other guy and just takes that spot for the rest of the time. You hope it's not Bradley Sal, in the sense that, oh goodness, DJ couldn't beat out Bradley Sal. DJ or Earl, for that matter, couldn't beat out Bradley Sal. That's frustrating for their development. If it's Earl or DJ, I think you just want to see them play and just continue to be the in the cohesiveness of that offensive line. And I think if they're running the ball well and Carson Palmer's having time to throw the football, that you will see the continuation of that line. But if for some reason there's issues, I think knowing who Bruce Arians has been as a coach for the past couple of years, I think the first move he'll make is bringing Massey back in. So if there's any kind of, you know, struggle in the run game or in pass protection, I think they'll move Massey back into the starting lineup. Like I said, if the first, you know, 2 or 3 games, whatever Massey ends up suspended, goes off without a hitch, whoever that is, if it's Humphreys or Wofford, or, you know, even Sal, I think they have to leave them in, don't you? I mean, if things are going well, if they're averaging, you know, 95 to 100, and, you know, 95 plus yards a game on the ground and, you know, or have only given up one or two sacks all season, wouldn't you want to see them let whoever the young guy is that won that position continue to play?
You think so. DJ happens to step in and he starts instead of Massey and he kills it. There's no issue with that. That's only an issue for Massey. It's not an issue for the team because they drafted in the first round and hey, you ended up with a starter. Fantastic. What gets a little bit hairy in my sure at the end you want someone playing well, but if you look ahead, what if Earl Watford steps in and kills it to where you don't want to put Massey in? Now, that leaves you in an interesting situation where you draft a guy in the first, not ready in the first year. And the knock on DJ right now is motivation, maturity. They call him knee deep. And why do they call him knee deep? That's how far up his rear the coaches have their feet, because they have to really ride him. And he's young, which is true. He should have been in school one. And Kimble. And a year from now, he would have been a top five pick, but he's not. So he's learning on the fly in the pros. So let's say Watford wins it and kills it, and Massey ends up on the bench. But now you've got Massey on the bench, and you've got DJ on the bench. And Massey's going to leave. No big deal. But next season, and your first round pick ready to overtake Watford. And Watford is good. I mean, do you pose that a problem? Now, Watford will be entering his contract here, so you could still do the same thing, but then you've kind of like identically to Jonathan Cooper that you then burn 2 years of their deal on the bench, which is tough because then you only get two more years on that cheap deal. Would you see that as a problem? Or is it's kind of like, well, that's not exactly as long as it works, but you think, that's disappointing because you drafted a star for year two.
I think it's kind of one of those things that you're disappointed, but you're also happy because, hey, you got a fourth round pick that ended up becoming a starter too. So, I think it's one of those things that if Arians is true about his, you know, the best players play type situation, doesn't matter whether they're drafted or how much they played. I think you're kind of rooting for, obviously you're rooting for Humphreys to win that job and just run away with it for the next 2 or 3 years until Valdir's contract's up, and then, you know, maybe then you be moved to left tackle or something like that. But I think you really want to see, you know, Humphreys win that position and be the starter for the next, like I said, 3 years. But if Watford wins the position, I don't think that's necessarily, like I said, a bad thing. I just think it's just going to make an inconvenient situation where now all of a sudden Humphreys is probably going to be your backup swing tackle, so kind of like Bradley Staal. And, you know, that's not what anybody wants for the 24th overall pick, but...
No, it's not.
But, I mean, are you really going to be mad that your 24th overall rookie can't beat up a guy that you drafted in the fourth round and or your, you know, almost $10 million a year left tackle? I mean, I guess I understand why people would be upset about him not being able to beat out Watford, but doesn't that kind of do what the Cardinals have never really done? And that means they developed an offensive lineman to be they brought him from like the bottom to, you know, a starter from the fourth round and a good starter at that. Something that we've, you know, long complained about with the Cardinals.
Well, that wouldn't be so bad, but it'd just be interesting to see. One of those things, Kyle Drasso, wait a minute, look, Jonathan Cooper missed 2 years, DJ Humphreys, potential, I mean, we're just playing hypotheticals here.
I think it's actually a good problem to have, right? Like, at least that's a good problem to have. It's not like...
Ideally, because that means it's a team.
Yeah, exactly. And it's the opposite of a couple of years ago where everybody, you know, you kick Levi Brown to the curb, and then you're like, man, I thought it couldn't get worse, and then they have Bradley Fowle. So.
But the sacks went down. Come on. Sacks went down. Bradley's a great guy. He's a valuable guy because he could play well on special teams. He's a good backup. He can step in. But, you know, you don't really want him any period of time unless for Matt somehow got stronger. So we've got the Matt situation. We've got Chris Johnson. We've got let's talk a little bit about Michael Floyd. Michael Floyd, who'll be, and there was a lot of worry. Oh my gosh, Michael Floyd's going to be really hurt. Are they going to get another receiver? Are they going to get Reggie Wayne? Tell everyone the reaction that you had about, well, do we need to get someone else? Oh, we're going to miss Michael Floyd. What was your reaction? Because I remember it was kind of funny.
Well, it was just, you know, it's funny that people are so concerned that the Cardinals lost their third best wide receiver. Like, that's just kind of how I felt.
There it is. The subtle dig on Floyd is like third best receiver. Wait, what? Although now I bought into the hype a couple of years ago when he had that run in 2013. I said, there he is. He's now become the Cardinals' best receiver. Whoops, I guess that was a jump in the gun. Do you think his absence will impact the team much if he misses maybe one or two games?
No, not at all. I think the team in general is set up to be successful without. You know, really missing a beat. Like, honestly, knock on wood, obviously, but honestly, you could lose two of your top five guys on this roster at that position, and I think they're okay. Which I don't think you can say that to many teams in the NFL. Like, you know, their top three, when it's Fitz, Floyd, and Brown, you know, is really, really good. One of the top, you know, three wide receiver or trios in the NFL. But I think the fact that, you know, one through five, you're talking Fitz, Floyd, Brown, and now J.J. Nelson, I think you're talking about just a really, really talented group of players. And that means that an injury to Floyd, even though it's just problematic in the sense that, again, it's an asset that they you know, used the 13th overall pick, and you'd really like to see him break out of a shell in Arizona and become the player that we all were expecting him to be. I don't think it's in the scope of the team and what's going to happen. I really don't think it matters. And that's just me. I mean, I could be completely wrong, but, you know, we said in a text message the other day, I think in – this time next year, we're going to be talking about J.J. Nelson as kind of the Mike Wallace player. John Brown is going to be kind of the Antonio Brown, and then you're going to have Fitz as the Hines Ward character in what Arians likes to do on in the passing game and on offense. And I think that's where you're going to see, you know, things change up. And now maybe you just can see it a little earlier to start with.
Well, downside to this is that Floyd was looking like the type of player you wanted to be. He was practicing with much more urgency. Now, he does have the comment. He's not one. He doesn't love practice. He doesn't like training camp, the hitting and the running. He's not a fan of it. He likes to play. But he looked like he was starting to get it. And it seems like every single time he looks like he's there, he has a setback of some sort. This time it's the fingers. I guess he's there. But talent, I mean, in terms of production, interesting development is not, because everyone pretty much thought, okay, so now you got Fitz and John Brown, and they're having more John Brown is not a bad thing. More John Brown is the way they've been talking. Here's an interesting tidbit. How the team feels John Brown and how critical he will be to the success for this team. The other day in the locker room, talking to Tyrann Mathieu, the reporters were talking about this and that. They were talking about how, you know, how, well, the Carson Palmer, again, knocked, but they're talking about doing the goal. And well, it's not going to be really full contact. We're going to kind of stay up off the ground because we don't want to, you know, we don't want to knock any guys to the ground. The reporter said, especially number three, he said, yeah, number three and number 12. John Brown is getting the Carson Palmer treatment.
Well, and that's also just because he's tiny, so they don't want to hurt him.
I mean, yes, but it wasn't like, oh, don't let Fitz, you don't want to knock Fitz down. No, it was John Brown. John Brown is that, yes, he's smaller in size, but they want to keep it. He's that important to the team. And so you get, that's a good thing. If John Brown run a few more pass routes, check the ball. But what's interesting is what happened to third receiver. I think everyone pretty much assumed that'd be Jerron Brown. And Jerron Brown, well, he could kind of do Michael Floyd type things. He's kind of acrobatic. He's not quite as, he's not as, but I have to look at how this plays out in the preseason. But on Saturday, Jerron Brown wasn't the third receiver in the three wide sets. That was JJ Nelson, the rookie who weighs like 10 pounds. Looks like, you know, he's got the body of a high school freshman. And it was Fitz and two really fast guys. and it wasn't Jerron Brown, which is kind of the Arians thing to do. But when Void returns, he adds a different dynamic, especially in the two wide sets, because he can block so well. Even though he doesn't love doing it, he does it well. It'll be interesting to see if what happens after.
Yeah, was
still there?
Yeah.
Oh, I was like,
sorry.
So I kind of wrapped it up. So it kind of puts you in this situation where it'll be interesting to see how this plays out.
Well, yeah, and I think, but like we said earlier, and like we've texted before, Arians, you know, has a type at receiver, and Nelson is that type. I mean, we joke that he weighs 155 pounds. It's not a joke. He really does. But, I mean, we joke about it, but he fits his mold more than Jerron Brown and even Michael Floyd. So it would kind of make sense that, you know, if Floyd is going to miss one or two games to start the season, you know, whatever it is, it would make sense that he would use JJ as kind of wide receiver three, because that would just have that would just be the way that he has things work. So I don't know. I get everything, but we'll see what happens.
Well, let's look at the depth chart. The depth chart came out on Monday, and you know, there. I mean, obviously, that's not something real to look at, but you saw that everyone's the voice you expected. The receivers was kind of what you expected. Tight end, though, is, you know, the interesting thing now. Part of it's because he's been injured. He hasn't come back all the way. Is Jermaine Gresham is not listed as one of the top two tight ends. He's listed. He's not missing from it. But you've got Ifeanyi Moma, and you've got Darren Fell. And day after day, it looks like he's a better and better player, kind of an impact player. On the offensive side of the ball, is there anything that stood out to you? To me, really, nothing really stood out other than, well, Kerwin Williams is their number two running back. That might change with quickly. But was there anything on the offensive side of the ball that stood out to you?
Not really. I think it's something that I, you know, kind of posed was if, or, you know, I was asked on Twitter, and I kind of posed the question to everybody, if, you know, God forbid anything happens to Jared Valdir, who's your left tackle? Like, because, you know, DJ Humphries hasn't taken any snaps over at left tackle. So that was.
Or Watford.
Yeah, so that was one of the questions I posed. That was interesting. And not, you know, because I expect Humphries to be left tackle two and right tackle two right now. Just more that I'm surprised that he wasn't listed at left tackle three. Kind of, you know, in quotes, wouldn't everybody knows he's left tackle too, if stuff would happen. But so that was probably the most interesting thing outside of the fact that Troy Nicholas doesn't play for the team anymore, apparently. I said outside of the most interesting thing outside of Humphreys not being on the left tackle depth chart was that Troy Nicholas doesn't play for the team anymore.
Oh, true. Well, I mean, he's listed behind Fells. The defensive side of the ball, there was really only one thing that stood out to me. It was this. From what I've seen in practices, and it appears that they're alternating. So I'm not going to put too much stock into it, and I bet it'll flip-flop for the next week. That Tony and Tyrann Mathieu are ahead of Deon Buchanan and Rashad Johnson, because I wore of Deon and Rashawn as the starters, with Ty just coming in for Dime and Tony as well, because Deon moves over to the linebacker. I'm betting this is simply okay. They're gonna get the look at base in this week. The next week that is and Rashad, and they just have those two paired together. Those two pairings is always Jefferson and Mathieu, and Buchanan and Johnson when it's in base. It's never flip-flopped any other way. I've seen it just in those two ways. Did that surprise you at all? I'm honestly surprised, because I thought, I don't think there's, the way Rashad plays upfield, he's take off the field because party is. Everyone said he knows how the plays are coming. And they own, I think they really just believe in what he can do and want him out there. And Tony Jefferson, he's good. I don't think he's as gifted or probably as the upside. He definitely doesn't have the upside they own. Mathieu, we'll have to wait and see. What did surprise you at all?
I was interested that, Jefferson was strong safety one. The interesting thing to me is, like you said, it's pairings, and they flip-flop them. And it makes sense, because you're talking about kind of steady, not spectacular guys in Rashad and Tony. And then you're talking about guys that gamble a lot and can make really, really big plays, but can also just get juiced in coverage a lot. And so, I think it makes sense, because you're trying to balance that. Like, I don't know how much you can have just Deon and Tyrann in the secondary as safeties together, because that's a lot of kind of freelancing going on back there.
Whereas, so much fun.
With Tony. Yeah, I mean, with Tony and Rashad, you're not going to get anything spectacular, but you're definitely going to get guys that'll, be in position to make a play where they're supposed to be, and they'll get beat at times athletically, but they'll be around there. So, I mean, it makes sense right now, because I think you're still probably a whole, season away from getting Deon to the Cam Chancellor level, which is where, everybody's hoping he gets to.
He holds out for training camp for more money. Is that what you're saying?
Well, if he plays well enough, I hope he does. I mean, that's a good problem to have sometimes. But Tyrann, I don't think there's really a player in the league like him. So I don't know exactly how they're going to use him going forward. Because like you said, they line him up at free safety. That's not really his best position. And you put him at slot corner and let him do some different things, and that's probably his best position. His best position is probably, quote unquote, strong safety, where, he's closer to the line of scrimmage than the deep safety. And then they just let him go. He's kind of, that rover position. And so when you put it together with Deon, you kind of have the same player, just in different sizes, what they excel at right now. And so that makes sense why they have it that way. I was actually interested in, I don't know what you thought about this, but I was interested in Matt Shaughnessy as a defensive end three. Like, that was kind of a defensive tackle three. I don't remember exactly what it was, but that was kind of stunning behind Ed Stinson. Because the other thing I'd heard was that he was running ahead of Ed. So you and I had talked about it, with a couple people. But we were wondering if Ed and Matt might get cut this offseason.
B.A. mentioned Ed Stinson, said that he's been doing a better job. He's been getting after the quarterback. Shaughnessy is kind of he's an interesting case for me, because I've seen him. Where I've seen him more at training camp is still at outside linebacker. Like, he comes in off the edge. Seen him line up. It's it's been interesting seeing him almost as much as I've seen him with his, you know, with his fist down at the ground and lined up as a defensive lineman.
Yeah, I mean, that's interesting to me because I mean, like we've talked about before, you're going to have Alex Okafor and Lamar Woodley and Marcus Golden and Kareem Martin. So those are your four, you know, quote unquote outside backers. So is Shaughnessy going to kind of just be like your fifth outside linebacker, and then you're going to let him flop down to defensive line if you have an injury? Like, is he just going to be kind of the depth guy on the roster? Because that's not necessarily a bad thing. I mean, if he's your...
No, it's just interesting with his role the past 2 years.
Yeah, because, I mean, he was such a talented run stopper on a, you know, the top three run stopping unit in the NFL, and now all of a sudden he's, like you said, kind of tumbled down the depth chart into an unknown what's he going to be type of thing. I mean, and like we talked about on defense, Gunter, you know, unless something crazy happens, he's making the roster. Obviously, Corey are making the roster, and Kalea, so that's four defensive linemen. And from there, I think...
And Frosty.
So there's your five. So from there, you've got, you know, you've got three or four interesting guys for two spots. And I think Matt has kind of that advantage of, like you said, you can flop him to outside linebacker. So maybe if you flop him to backer, then you still got two spots, and then you can look at, you know, both Te'Amu and Xavier Williams. But I think, you know, people have talked about how Josh Morrow has gotten some run with the first and second team. So it's just going to be interesting because I don't think anybody really knows after the top three, you know, with Calais, Corey, and Corey, I don't think anybody really knows what's going to happen on that defensive line with the you know, depth. So that'll be interesting to watch because I think you're going to see Morrow, Xavier Williams, and Rodney Gunter get a lot of time in these early trash preseason games to kind of prove that they belong on this roster.
Interesting fact. I also a couple of times for Josh Morrow, for lack of a better, it's the way they use the outside linebacker. He was even standing up a couple of times. It's interesting to say, you know, I completely skipped over one topic that we actually have to talk about, and that's Lyle Sendlein, who returned to the Cardinals.
How bad are they?
The way they took that. Now, what's that?
I said, how bad are their centers that they had to go back and get Lyle Sendlein?
Except for it sounded like they wanted him back all along. In fact, when he was released, there was the open door. They opened the door for him to come back in training camp. He not landed elsewhere. So, I mean, there's part, obviously, they weren't thrilled with. And it doesn't necessarily seem to me, it does not seem to me that they were as nearly as unhappy with EQ Shipley as they have been unhappy with Ted Larson, because Ted Larson is almost disappeared. He sometimes is on the second guard, but he's lost all his center snaps. Which is interesting because he's always been considered a better center than guard. So the writing on the wall for me has said Ted Larson's gone. Ted Larson's gone.
Hey, and I saw some people argue or talk online, you know, that Arians likes versatility, but you're missing one giant thing, and that's that AQ Shipley can play guard. So, you know, if something happens, God forbid, you know, to Cooper,
literally, AQ Shipley and Todd Larson are the same player.
Exactly. So
when they bring Shipley, they're exactly the same player. Well, ideally, better, Mark.
Yeah, and so if Shipley, you know, if, like I said, anything happens to your guards, you're just going to move Shipley to guard and Lyle's in your center. So it's not like it's this huge. Like, people are making this big deal about how Arians likes versatility, blah blah blah. So, like, then are you going to come?
But he also likes Lyle because he's smart.
Yeah, exactly. Well, and that's the thing is, that's what I took from this more than anything is that Ted Larson doesn't understand line calls, and maybe Shipley was struggling with the line calls. I don't know about that part. I know that Shipley hasn't looked good to a lot of people that I've talked to, And so maybe it has to do with that if they're going to get adequate, and I'm putting that nicely, adequate physical skills, then they can't have the missed line calls, that if that's what's happening, and they know that they won't get that from send line. So that would make sense. Like that makes sense to me, because then you're talking, obviously, having a guy like Sinline who has all the mental aspects of the game, you know, struggles with some physical aspects, but he'll be, you know, he'll be able to call the game the right way and help set protections. Clearly, that's going to.
And he should look better between Mike Iupati and Jonathan Cooper, a healthy Jonathan Cooper. He should look better between those two than when in between Ted Larson and Paul.
Well, I mean, yeah, but that's like, I don't know. There's some metaphors there I won't go into.
So you have to, I mean, the assumption pretty much everyone is going with is that Lyle will eventually overtake you. Pretty much the assumption they're going with. Because if you have Lyle's line on your team, why would you have him a backup? Especially with the Ascensi's. I can understand why you would. It's okay. It's okay because your center is he's already a swing player. He's just happy sitting. But why bring him in if you don't think he's going to end up being the starter?
Well, maybe
he sucks now and he gets cut. But I don't think that's going to be the case.
No, I don't think so either. And I think you hit it on the head with Larson. The fact that Larson is removed from the center depth chart, the fact that Larson's not taking any snaps at center, I think they were just so disenchanted with what Larson was doing at center that they're just going to have they probably called Lyle and said, Lyle, we'll offer you a contract. You're going to come in and start as the backup, you know, and we'll go from there. Shipley's the guy. Because you and I have talked about this. Shipley, from the moment they signed him, he was going to be the center. Like, there wasn't any question about it, right? Like, Arian went out of his way to talk about
more or less. They said that he and Ted were going to be AQ every single snap by the offseason.
Yeah, and Arian went out of his way to talk about how he's wanted in the last 2 years that he's been there. So, you know, I think Lyle probably understands that he was coming in as a backup with the opportunity to start because maybe AQ was struggling with some stuff, but he's going to make the team as a backup. Larson's going to get cut. I think your final eight offensive linemen will be, you know, the five starters that we talked about, and then I think you'll have Humphreys, Watford, and Lyle, and then on game days, maybe Humphreys is inactive. I don't know. Like, I don't want to say that, but Watford can play guard and center, and then you have Lyle as your center backup. Watford can play guard and tackle, and then you have Lyle as your center backup. I don't know. Obviously, it doesn't matter right now because Matthew's suspended for 3 games. So.
Well, and that just means that Sal is, to me, it means that Sal's a block for the team, at least for.
He's on the team for 2 to 3 weeks. I mean,
yes.
And then from there, you know, obviously it'll depend, you know, obviously things.
Which means he gets a salary. Good for Bradley. Good for Bradley.
No, and
because if he's on the
list. You always cheer for guys like Brad Fowl and Ryan Lindley. Like, as garbage as they are as players, they're nice people and they work their ass off and they're smart and, you know, They're loyal and, you know, they're the epitome of what's good about football. It just happens to not.
Yeah. So why not? So if they end up getting cut after week two, but they still get their $700,000 for the year, hey, good for them.
Yeah, exactly. Good for them. And, you know, yeah. And it's not their fault that they're just not as talented as other people because they definitely work harder than a lot of them. So, like, you can't knock them. Just there's certain things that you're not blessed with. And they're blessed enough to be in the NFL for plenty of years. So, but yeah, I think
so. Anthony Steen, what do you think about Anthony Steen?
Yeah, I think he's gone.
Now, this is actually kind of a little bit of a move because they were flip flopping Steen and Lyle on second team snaps at center today. It looked like initially that he was off the map, but then he getting set third team center snap. Obviously, the number comes into play. He wasn't going to make the team with both AQ and Ted are on the team. The best role for him right now is swing guard, either center guard, but bringing in Punick makes that too. He can still do practice squad, but they do like what he has to offer. But we'll be interested to see, does he make a play to make the squad? Does Lyle still in the tank? Because Lyle's contract is structured. If he can make the team, then he's in good shape. And he'll get playing time incentives for like that. And he'll make a little more than the 1.5 million he was offered. I'm just kind of interested in seeing how that plays out. Make a play and Lyle decide, no, or the team goes, never mind. We're going to go with AQ and we're going to go with Steen. I don't know. I still think Steen is probably on the outside looking in, has the benefit of the practice squad since they reported do like what they see from him.
Yeah, and I mean, it's just one of those things, like you said, it gets caught up in the numbers game. You can't keep all those guys. So if, if Lyle makes the team, you're not going to cut Earl Watford, and, obviously you're not going to cut DJ Humphreys, so that's just for your backups. Like, that's just kind of how it crumbles. Then bringing back Lyle was kind of, it's not a death knell, but it's definitely like they just put the lid on his coffin of being like on the active roster. Unless somebody gets hurt, they're, starting to nail down the coffin, so to speak, because like you said, he'll probably end up on the practice squad or get poached to another team because he's talented. But I mean, you don't bring in a veteran center only player and then, keep basically a rookie swing guy over him. He's really going to have to play well in the preseason to make this roster, like really, really well. Like push for the starting position type well, I would think. Or center line just has to be really fat and out of shape, which is always possible. I mean, to be honest, you think you're going to retire and you get into retirement mode and maybe you don't work as hard, so that could happen. But I honestly, like I said, with Massey on the suspension list for the first three games, we'll just say I think. You have your starting five, whether it's Watford or Humphreys at right tackle, it doesn't matter right now. And then you have Sal, Sunline, and then the other one at your backup. So those are your eight offensive linemen you'll keep. I just don't think there's enough room for Steen to make this roster.
All right, so there you have it. We talked Sunline, we talked Floyd, we talked Chris Johnson and the running back situation. We even talked a little about the depth chart. We've got some more. Arizona Cardinals will be playing real fake all this today against the Kansas City Chiefs. And I actually have of our two a week podcast, I'm starting to fire that up. At least it looks like we have finally opened to our weekly segment. And tomorrow, Wednesday afternoon, I will be on the air with Arrowhead Pride. Rob's SB Nation, and also, sort of my boss man when it comes to he's the NFL league manager. But we're going to talk previewing the Kansas City Chiefs. So it'll be a little bit like last year. Seth and I will have me and Seth on one show talking about the card, and then I'll interview someone on the site, hopefully, ideally from the SB Nation sites to kind of preview the game. Right now, it'll be more talking about their offseason, exposition. Generic stuff, but we bring that back to you officially starting week. This is Jess Seth Cox. Good night. Thank you for listening to Revenge. We will talk to you next week.
Have a good night, everybody.
You've been listening to Revenge of the Birds. Keep the conversation going by visiting revengeofthebirds.com. Follow us on Twitter at Revenge of Birds. You can also find us on iTunes at facebook.com/Revenge of the Birds.